Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has reached in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, yes, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. Together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Well, I love that song. Tom Lehrer, couldn't be better. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. We have much to discuss. I will be taking callers a second hour. And since Mitchell cannot be with me today, his internet is locked up. Giuseppe has kindly stepped in to fill in the breach, and I'll be announcing the number. But we'll have much to discuss during the second hour. Meanwhile, as everyone in the world knows by now, President Trump has named Amy Comey Barrett to be his nominee to the Supreme Court. She's 48 years old, very young. She was named to fill the vacancy for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's Catholic. Ginsburg was Jewish. There were 6-3 Catholics to Jews. Now there would be 7-2 with her confirmation. She clerked for the late originalist Antonin Scalia, has stated his judicial philosophy is her judicial philosophy, namely a judge must apply the law as written. Judges are not policymakers, and they must be resolute in setting aside any policy views they might personally hold. She was a law professor at Notre Dame until she was selected by Trump to join the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in 2017. It is the case that Dianne Feinstein grilled her about her faith, which was really awkward because, let me note, not only are other prominent officials such as Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi Catholic, but there is explicitly stated in the Constitution, there shall be no religious test for holding federal office, which means that Dianne Feinstein was completely off base. It appears that the Republicans are going to go with attacking her by claiming she's going to deny the public of health benefits under the Affordable Care Act, which they believe that she will vote to nullify. That may very well be the case. From my reading and understanding, I do not believe that this is going to be a vote to nullify Roe v. Wade. I personally believe every woman should have the right to choose, and that the court decided wisely in that instance, declaring in effect that the developing fetus, zygous embryo fetus, does not actually become a person until at the end of the second trimester, when viability occurs, namely the ability of the developing entity to survive outside of the intrauterine environment. It turns out to be a function not of heart or brain activity, but of the lungs being developed to such a state. So that from that point, at the end of the second trimester, or roughly 6 months into a nine-month gestation, the developing entity has the most primary right to life, namely not to be aborted, save to preserve the life or health of the mother. In other words, an abortion at that point after the 6 months, for say, because it's going to be a girl and you'd rather have a boy, or it's going to be blue-eyed and you want it brown, or even if it had a birth defect and you'd prefer it not. Those are illegal under Roe v. Wade, which most of the country, frankly, doesn't understand, because these matters are never delved into in a suitable fashion for the purpose of political propaganda. But I think this decision was wisely rendered by the court at the time. Democrats have gone complete full-blown infanticide on this, where the governor of Virginia, for example, has even endorsed infanticide or completing an abortion after birth has occurred, which under Roe v. Wade would be a form of murder. I think he is a monster, and anyone who advocates such a position is completely in the wrong. Let there be no misunderstanding about it. On the other hand, I think it's highly probable that Amy Coney Bryant will vote to nullify federal government paying for abortions. I think that's an open issue. I think she's entitled to make the appropriate decision. It's very interesting how the usual suspects are going to oppose her, but some unusual suspects actually support her. This is a liberal law professor from Harvard. Amy Coney Barrett deserves to be on the Supreme Court. He has made that appeal and made observations such as follows in support. I got to know Barrett more than 20 years ago when we clerked at the Supreme Court during the 1998-99 term. Of the 30-some clerks that year, all of whom graduated at the top of their law school classes and done prestigious appellate clerkships before coming to work at the court, Barrett stood out. Measured subjectively and unscientifically by pure legal acumen, she was one of the two strongest lawyers. The other was Jenny Martinez, now dean of Stanford Law School. When assigned to work on an extremely complex, difficult case, especially one involving hard-to-comprehend statutory schemes, I would first go to Barrett to explain it to me. Then I would go to Martinez to tell me what I should think about it. Fascinating. He endorses her wholeheartedly, even though he disagrees. He continues, "We have a Supreme Court nominee who is a brilliant lawyer, a genuine and good person, and someone who holds views about how to interpret the law that I think are wrong and in certain respects misguided. I hope the senators at her hearing nevertheless treat her with respect. And when she is confirmed, I'm going to accept it as the consequence of the constitutional rules we have and the choices we collectively and individually have made. And I'm going to be confident that Barrett is going to be a good justice, maybe even a great one, even if I disagree with her all the way." There's a wonderful photograph of the whole family. She has adopted two Haitian children. One of them is a young woman, the other a little boy, plus her youngest child is a special needs child. I won't be surprised if it turns out that was from the effects of a vaccination. Ruth Bader Ginsburg purportedly claimed, and I think this is complete nonsense, that her dying wish was her replacement not be done, only be done by the new president. This is a Democratic propaganda, and Bader Ginsburg should have known better that if she really wanted a Democrat to appoint a replacement, then she could have very effortlessly retired from the bench when Barack Obama was president, and at that point in time, it would have taken place. There's a political cartoon of an infant in the womb declaring, "My most fervent wish is that Trump will pick Ginsburg's replacement, and that's going to happen." Meanwhile, Joe Biden is refusing to answer the question whether he supports a plan to pack the Supreme Court with activist liberals. He can't answer it. I think there's more than one reason. He has also been unable to provide a list of his nominees to the court. I think it's because it would be so obvious that these were extremist candidates who are going to upset the process of government of the United States that he'd lose massive in the voting, so he can't do it. Contrast that with President Trump, who's done precisely the opposite. He's publicized his list of nominees. He received a considerable degree of praise, but if anyone disagrees with his choices, they at least know what choices he proposed to make, and therefore do so with knowledge. With Joe Biden, it's precisely the opposite way around. He's not willing to even name those that he would consider because so much of the nation would be completely repulsed. This guy is a catastrophic nominee for the presidency, and I think anyone who's paying attention is going to recognize that he's unqualified. He's mentally, I would submit, even morally unfit to serve as president of the United States, but his cognitive incompetence is manifest and overwhelming. Meanwhile, the New York Times has published a summary of 20 years of Trump tax returns, which are being described as fake news. With a news and outrage cycle in need of a fresh Trump reset, now the first presidential debate is just a day away. On Sunday afternoon, almost exactly 2 years after the New York Times first published a report alleging how Trump engaged in suspect tax schemes as he reaped riches from his father, the New York Times published what to many anti-Trumpers is the holy grail of Trump bombshells, a 10,000-plus word summary of more than two decades of Trump tax documents that reveal the president paid no income tax 10 of the 15 years before he was elected, whereas income tax payments in 2016 and 2017 amounted to just $750. The reason, as was already largely known, he generated nearly $1 billion in casino-linked losses in the 1990s and onwards, which incidentally, a loss carry forwards are perfectly acceptable and legal instruments which anyone can apply against future income and that offset much of the money he had made. In other words, the guy's a rich guy and he's very smart and he has the best possible legal and accounting advice to explain how best to protect his income to not pay any unnecessary taxes. The New York Times also claims a document shows Trump losing millions from his golf courses, allowing further vast write-offs, an audit battle, hundreds of millions in debt coming due, and that Trump had earned $73 million abroad. Combined, Trump initially paid almost $95 million in federal income taxes over the 18 years. He later managed to recoup most of that money with interest by applying for and receiving a $72.9 million tax refund starting in 2010. This really doesn't look to me like it's a significant development that the Democrats, who have been hoping that there'd be something terrible and revealing here, aren't finding it. They've got to be acutely disappointed. While the media is going through all these revelations with a fine-tooth comb, it's notable what the report fails to show, that unless the New York Times has saved the kicker for a subsequent article, there appears to be no wrongdoing, no Russia ties, nothing of substance apart from what most corporations do, as the National Pulse's Raheem Kassim writes. Also of note, the New York Times failed to include the details of the returns, admitting in its own article, the Times declined to provide the records in order to protect its sources. Now, I just say, this is the Democrats doing everything they can to try to harm Trump in this election year, and they're just having no success in doing it. Meanwhile, we have a very positive development from a Trump ally in Florida, where Governor DeSantis has reopened the state's economy, banning mask mandate penalties. This is my kind of a governor, basking mask mandate penalties. Excellent. Here's what we have about it. Governor Ron DeSantis lifted all restrictions on restaurants and other businesses in Florida on Friday and banned local fines against people who refuse to wear masks as he seeks to reopen the state's economy despite the coronavirus. The Republican governor's order unleashed fresh debate in the politically divided state, where pandemic responses have become intertwined with the coming presidential election. DeSantis, a major ally of President Trump, acknowledged the pandemic is far from over, but he said, appropriately in my judgment, the threat has eased and the time has come to reopen for business. May every other governor of every other state follow his example. We're not closing anything going forward, DeSantis said, while insisting the state is prepared if infections increase again. The governor said he would stop cities and counties from collecting fines on people who don't wear face masks, virtually nullifying local mask ordinance. What could be more appropriate? This is totally the right thing to do. I've been reporting again and again that masks are damaging for you. They're especially harmful for children because they deprive their cardiovascular system and their whole bodies of sufficient oxygen to deplete their cells, including their brain cells. I have projected, and I have no doubt the situation may even be worse, a drop in the average IQ of Americans of 5 points by the time we're through all of this nonsense. Absolute rubbish. DeSantis has slowly reopened the state, allowing restaurants and bars to reopen at half capacity, while deferring to local officials who advocated reopening more slowly in the pandemic's epicenter center in South Florida after having closed most of the economy on St. Patrick's Day. But he, in my opinion, has been far more responsible and intelligent about the way he's handling this than the Democratic governors, who have been just god-awful and have destroyed their state's economy and are doing even worse. I mean, Cuomo in New York and Newsom in California being particularly gruesome illustrations of how bad things can get. Meanwhile, the CDC and Fauci's NIAID added non-pneumonia deaths to the U.S. COVID total, unlike other countries. If these deaths had been removed, then instead of you're hearing over 200,000 deaths, the U.S. would have only had 86,000. And even that number is exaggerated because we know that the CDC recently acknowledged that if you took out all the comorbidities, all the deaths that resulted from causes over and beyond coronavirus, that it would be fewer than 10,000. For months, doctors and investigative journals have wondered why state coronavirus death counts included motorcycle accidents, homicide, birth defects, gunshot wounds, even suicides. I mean, it's completely absurd. And thousands of intentional injuries and poisoning to the U.S. coronavirus death total. It's almost as though the medical elites are doing all they can to pad the count, which, of course, is exactly what they're doing, where Minnesota State Senator had reported that the hospitals were receiving $13,000 for every patient they identified as coronavirus, $39,000 for everyone they put in onto a ventilator. It's grotesque what's been going on here. Meanwhile, further evidence that it's all a massive scam. After 48,299 COVID-19 cases at 37 U.S. universities, only 2 hospitalizations and 0 deaths, you're more likely to be killed by a dog or struck by lightning. So what's going on here? The cases that are being reported on the basis of this flawed test, the CPR test that picks up fragments of a COVID residue. If you ever had a cold, you're probably going to test positive by this absurd test. It's not specific to COVID-19, and it's giving these wildly inflated numbers. Just look at the ratio here. You got nearly 50,000 COVID cases identified by these faulty tests, but only 2 hospitalizations and 0 deaths. It's that bad. Truly, truly disgusting. Meanwhile, and this will come as no news to those of you who follow this show or are otherwise keeping informed, new poll finds a big gulf on top issues between Biden and Trump voters in battleground states. Get this. Polls of voters in 3 battleground states, Wisconsin, where I reside, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, found a stark contrast between Biden and Trump voters as what they view as the most important issues. Biden voters listed COVID-19 as a top issue. Climate change, inequality, and health care were nearly tied for 2nd. But for Trump voters, the economy was the top issue, while the next 2nd was crime, urban violence. They ranked COVID-19 3rd. I think that's clear that the Democrats are really buying into their own propaganda, that the Republicans aren't allowing themselves to be played. Meanwhile, there may still be a Biden lead nationwide. According to this article, let's see, published originally, just a day or two ago, they claim Biden was leading Trump 49-44 among registered voters in both Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, but it's narrower among likely voters. And it turns out that independents are moving in Trump's direction. This is very, very significant because the electorate has 3 major components. The left, about 1/3, the right, about 1/3, and the independents in the middle who determine the outcome of our elections. There's a shift in independents in all 3 states, with 47% saying they support Trump, up from 42% in August. In the same poll, Biden dropped from 51 in August to 46. So you got Trump going up 5%, Biden dropping by 5%. That's a 10-point shift altogether. Biden is supposed to maintain his lead here in Wisconsin. Frankly, I'm very skeptical about it. In fact, most of these polls seem to me to be highly misleading because we know Trump supporters tend to have an extra support that is being reflected in the polls by somewhere between 5 and 6%. Here's the recent, listen to this, of Biden, trying to explain himself, very, very revealing about his lack of cognitive competence. Listen.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. Come on, man. All men and women created by go, you know the thing. Come on, man. We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what. Come on, man. No man has a right to raise a hand to a woman in anger other than in self-defense, and that's rarely ever occurs. Come on, man. I got hairy legs. Come on, man. If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black. Come on, man. I'm going to beat Joe Biden. Come on, man.
I think he got that part right about he's going to beat Joe Biden because no one's going to make a bigger difference in defeating Joe Biden than Joe Biden. Turns out he's also been napping for most of September. If he thought Hillary ran one of the worst and incompetent presidential campaigns in American history, check out Joe Biden in 2020. The No Malarkey Tour is pretty incredible. This is the first time we've had televised presidential campaigns that the Democratic candidate is practically nowhere to be seen, but we're told he's fine. He's just fine. He's doing fine. Nothing to see here. Just move along, I suppose, as we know from Star Wars. Meanwhile, what do we have going on? Well, actually, he's had the lid shut down, meaning no campaign or appearances for most of September or a good many days. For the first 22 days, the campaign got put a lid on it for September 1st, September 8th, 10th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 19th, and 22nd. If you worked a 40-hour week, and even if you took Labor Day off, you were still working more days in September than Joe Biden and the pool of reporters covering his campaign. He's literally had to take a third of the month off to rest in his basement. Biden's had to take a three-week weekend to recover. We'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partner are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Yes, this is your host, Jim Fetzer, on The Raw Deal. We figured out, well, not I personally, how Joe Biden is going to cheat, and it's going to happen tomorrow night at the debate. But for those of you who may want to call in during the second hour, 30 minutes from now, here is the number to reach Giuseppe, 703-879-8880. I repeat. The call-in number for today, with Giuseppe producing, for which I'm most appreciative, 703-879-8889. I look forward to hearing from you, and we'll talk about what's going on prior to the debate. Meanwhile, there's a very, very interesting piece about how Biden's going to fake it. This is from a guy who had a background in television. Color me surprised. I've been predicting for months now that Joe Biden would bail out on the debates due to his inability to string two sentences together without a teleprompter. But it now looks like Biden will attend the first debate tomorrow night. His team has figured out a technological workaround to help control him in public appearances and keep up the charade that Biden has most of his faculties or a mind of his own. After all the years I worked in TV news, I'm kind of kicking myself I didn't spot this trick earlier. Keep in mind that Democrats are willing to do just about anything to cheat in the presidential election, this election especially. That includes, from the past, grade school level cheating, such as then DNC head honcho Donna Brazile handing CNN's debate questions to Hillary prior to the debate, but also includes much more sophisticated technological methods. Think back to the first debate in 2016 between Trump and the crooked Hillary. That's the debate where she wore the red pantsuit she stole from King John Um's wardrobe. Literally everyone on the right noticed a square box under Hillary's jacket that was taped to her back, and the wires rain up toward her head. The device sparked a lot of theories about what it was. Some thinking it was a medical device to control Hillary's seizures. But having worked in TV for many years, I instantly recognized it because I used to wear one at work every day. It was a power source and wireless receiver for Hillary's earpiece. Somehow, someone within close enough proximity was able to relay information to Hillary during the debate to make it look like she just has so many obscure facts and figures floating around in that big brain. Now, during that debate, Donald Trump patted her on the back. He knew what was going on, but he went about beating her anyway. Fast forward to 2020, and here's how Joe Biden's team plans to cheat. They've already tested this method out in several public appearances. Is Joe Biden using a teleprompter part of the time? Yes, absolutely. We've all seen it. He's using handwritten notes, a teleprompter, his computer screen, any other resource they can to prop him up and make it look like he's not really an old man with really bad Alzheimer's. But this is an inspired piece of evil genius. This is going to sound like something out of a science fiction movie, but bear with me. This is totally real, and I'll prove it to you. Joe Biden has a medical device implanted in his skull. It's called the Esteem Hearing Implant, which you can learn about online. It's an implant that goes into the skull above the ear and has two microwire probes that are injected into the nerves inside the ear canal. It's an FDA-approved device, and it uses bone conduction to enhance hearing. That is, sound waves vibrating off the bones of the skull where the wire probes send the signals directly into the ear. It's wireless, and it's controlled by the push of a button, so the user can turn it on and off with a little device that fits in your pocket. And that's how the experts at Bombard's Body Language spotted the trick. Joe Biden gets really addled during unscripted public appearances and interviews. It happened during the CNN town hall recently. When someone starts talking to Joe Biden, there are times when he gets that addled old man expression of sheer terror and confusion on his face. He's totally lost, doesn't have a clue where he is or what's happening. But then, every single time, Joe Biden does what he's been trained to do in these situations. His right hand goes into his pocket. Then he smiles that big Joe Biden politician smile we all recognize after 47 years of being around this guy. Then he answers the question. When Joe Biden gets confused, he reaches into his pocket and turns on the implant. Whoever is talking to him on the other end instructs him to smile and then starts relaying answers to him until he gets back on track. Joe hears it because the implant receives a wireless signal and vibrates the bones in his skull. The body language experts have also noticed that whenever Biden is receiving instructions through the implant, he cannot make eye contact with a person asking him a question. This is a natural enough response. Even a young, healthy, and spry young mind like Donald Trump's can't receive communication input from two sources at the same time. Joe Biden has to look away from the speaker in order to listen to his handlers, which is why he always looks down when he's being asked a question. He's not thinking or listening intensely. He's receiving instructions from his handlers on which talking points to rattle off. And I've noticed this repeatedly. Joe Biden looking down. It's not normal. He does it now all the time. Now we know. Now you know what to watch for during the debates. If Joe Biden looks terrorized and completely lost and confused, he'll reach into his pocket to turn on his skull implant, and then he'll smile every time. We also know why Joe Biden completely vanished from the campaign trail during July. He wasn't just hiding in his basement. He was getting his implant installed and recovering from the surgery. Mark my words, that's exactly what you're going to see tomorrow night. Meanwhile, we know the Commission on Presidential Debate has revealed the topics for the first debate on Tuesday. The six topics chosen by debate moderator Chris Wallace are the Trump and Biden records, the Supreme Court, COVID-19, the economy, race and violence in our cities, the integrity of the election. The topics are subject to possible change with developing news, won't necessarily be brought up in that order. Wallace will moderate six segments of approximately 15 minutes each. He will open each segment with a question, and the president and the Democratic nominee will each have 2 minutes to respond. After that, Trump and Biden can talk with each other while Wallace will balance time between the two for the remaining discussion about the topic. Let me review them briefly. The Trump and the Biden records. Well, Biden really doesn't have a great deal of a record. I mean, over his 47 years in the Senate, he's done bad things, such as supporting NAFTA. And of course, Barack Obama and his, all of his bad actions. He was involved in the planning of the Sandy Hook event. We know that was the case because the mayor of Boston appeared on a show hosted by Andy Rooney's daughter just days before the event called Greater Boston, where he boasted of his close relationship with Joe Biden and how the vice president had told him that gun control would be a done deal by January of 2013, leading the host to ask in astonishment what could possibly happen for legislation to pass so rapidly. Of course, the mayor was reluctant to admit what was going on here, but assured that was what he had learned from Joe Biden. In fact, the event took place on the 14th of December, 2012. It was the second day of a two-day FEMA mass casualty exercise involving children. No one was harmed. No one was killed, but it was presented as mass murder to promote gun control. A month and 2 days later, on the 16th of January, Barack Obama signed no less than 21 executive orders to constrain our access to weapons under the Second Amendment. How outrageous is that? That's part of the Biden record. The Supreme Court, well, Donald Trump has made two and now is making a third appointment to the court. This is very bad news for the Democrats, what they wanted to avoid at all costs. One of the reasons they've been so concerned with trying to get Trump run out of office, so concerned that they even participated in the skullduggery by the FBI and the Department of Justice to sabotage his administration before he'd ever been brought to inauguration. This is a cause for celebration on the right. Plenty of discussion about the Supreme Court is only going to energize Trump's base. I know the Democrats are so panic-stricken. Their donations went up, but frankly, there's nothing they can do about it. COVID-19, I believe even the dumbest of the dumb have figured out that something is wrong, that this pandemic appears to be a political event, not a medical emergency. That Dr. Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci and Deborah Birx played the president early on using the Nigel Ferguson bottle from Imperial College, to which Bill Gates had donated in excess of $100 million, where the Ferguson bottle projected that if the economy weren't shut down, 2.2 million Americans and 500,000 Brits would die. Trump, I think, showing forever that he was putting the interests of America ahead of his own personal interests, fully aware that he would be thereby depriving himself of the great economic advantage he had going into a re-election with the most robust economy the country has ever known and the most soaring stock market, setting records almost daily, shut down the nation. It was supposed to be short term. It's been dragged out. It's now clear this is part of a massive plan to subjugate the whole world, actually, if they can pull it off by, forms of manipulation that are involving the greatest wealth transfer in history, the destruction of the middle class, I think debate on COVID-19 can only favor the president. The economy, similarly. I mean, if Biden tries to blame Trump for the failure of the economy, no one's going to believe it because no one accepts the idea that he's responsible for coronavirus. The Democrats have tried to put that noose around his neck, but they have been completely unsuccessful in doing so. And I say, when the public looks around and asks, who can bring us back from this economic rubble caused by this devastation improperly imposed upon the nation by quarantining the healthy when you should only quarantine the sick, which Dr. Fauci, after all, had to have known. And if he were not the prime suspect here in bringing about this calamity, where he was announcing already in 2017 there'd be a surprise pandemic, which meant that it would be no surprise for him. And since he was the guy who's supposed to prepare us to cope with it, he obviously failed. We even have photographs of him with Barack Obama in a bio lab along with none other than Melinda Gates. You know this is a Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci medical mafia operation, no doubt supported by Henry Kissinger, Hillary Clinton, Ted Turner, and other miscreants who want to bring about a massive destruction in the world's population and are doing their best to bring that about. I say the public asking itself, who best to rebuild the economy from where we stand now, is going to look to the man who brought us the most robust economy in our history, Donald J. Trump. So all four of those issues already seem to be major losers. When it comes to race and violence in our cities, I think the Democrats sealed their fate when during the 4 days of their virtual convention, 2 hours per night, urban violence was not even addressed. It was the major issue confronting the country. Black Lives Matter has been, you know, in the forefront here, bringing about the destruction of our cities, looting, rioting, even killing, and the Democrats have aided and abetted. And the deeper you dig, the worse it gets. It turns out that if you were to make a donation to Black Lives Matter, it would turn out to go to Act Blue, which is a Democrat fundraising site, and all the money would actually be, it would turn out, distributed to Beto O'Rourke, to Elizabeth Warren, to Hillary Clinton, to Joe Biden. I mean, it's just disgusting. As far as the integrity of the election goes, Trump, the arguments are all on Trump's side. We know how bad it is. We know what's taking place here. It's embarrassingly bad. In fact, we know more about the plan, the Democrats' seven-step strategy to win the election using vote-by-mail chaos. Here it is. Use the pandemic to push for a nationwide vote-by-mail scheme. Enlist all of the messengers at your disposal, Hollywood, corporate, media, big tech, pro sports, to push for vote-by-mail. Send Democrat lawyers into key districts to fight for every challenge ballot. Use the courts and progressive election officials to keep the count going as long as possible with as little to be decided, a little verification as possible. Set expectations that the election will not be decided on November 3rd. Plan for mass protests in the streets. Scare people into believing Trump won't leave office should he attempt to challenge the results. Challenge the results in court with the help of election officials and district attorneys that George Soros has spent years getting into position. Let Chief Justice Roberts or the new justice pick up the next president, or let Nancy Pelosi do it now. If the Supreme Court doesn't intervene, or the court were split 4-4, which this new appointment makes highly unlikely, since there's no good reason to believe that Amy Coney Bryant will not be confirmed and in short order, and neither Trump nor Biden has an Electoral College majority by December 14th, the date the electors must cast their vote, the House of Representatives could decide the election. The 12th Amendment states that if no candidate has an Electoral College majority, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. As Breitbart's Joel Pollack recently noted, the word immediately suggests the current Congress, led by Speaker Pelosi, could, under those circumstances, choose the president. But, as Pollack points out, there's a catch. The 12th Amendment makes clear that in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. So even though the House has 435 representatives, a majority of whom are Democrats, there will only be 50 votes cast, one for each state's delegation. And here's the kicker. The Republicans control more state delegations than the Democrats. Republicans are currently the majority in 26 delegations. Notice, 25 is half of 50. They're the majority in 26. Democrats are the majority in 23. The other, Michigan, is evenly split 7-7, though Michigan's Trump-hating libertarian, Justin Amash, will almost certainly throw in with the Dems. But still, that would mean by a vote of 26-24, Donald Trump would be reelected president. Now, I ran this whole scenario past a retired professor of law of my acquaintance, John Remington Graham, and he reported back to me as follows. The fourth clause of Article 2, Section 1, which survived the 12th Amendment and remains still in effect today, says that Congress may establish a day universal across the nation on which presidential electors shall be appointed and a day on which they shall cast their votes. Several states this year have delayed the counting of popular votes until mailed ballots arrive at election headquarters, which they can do for a short while as courts in those states have held. But Congress has enacted a statute, 3 U.S. Code Section 7, which stipulates, in effect, plain enough, that electors in each state must cast their votes on the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. So, delay in counting popular votes cannot exceed that deadline. Hence, in Bush v. Gore, the United States Supreme Court handed down their decision before the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December, so the electoral votes of Florida could be counted. Also, the first section of Amendment 20 says that the term of Congress ends on the 3rd of January, and a new session begins as the term of the president ends at noon on the 20th of January, which means that Nancy Pelosi will cease to be Speaker of the House before Donald Trump completes his current term in office. Therefore, Nancy will not automatically become acting president if the fantastic plan of the DNC were attempted. My conclusion is that those on the DNC are incompetent in their understanding of our Constitution as they are nutty in their political ideas. My message to them is, it won't work, guys. I repeat, John Remington Graham, professor of law, retired, a very smart guy. So it looks as though the Democrats are absolutely up a creek without a paddle. Meanwhile, Trump is wooing Latino and Black voters. He's been very successful. He's moving all over the country to do it. At a Black Voices for Trump event in Atlanta, Trump announced his campaign, dubbed a Platinum Plan, laying out his promise to Black America if he wins a second term and getting a push for economic development and loan money, and a plan to designate Juneteenth as a federal holiday, which commemorates the end of slavery in the United States, so named because June 19th, 1865, is when slaves were freed in Galveston, Texas. Now, the announcement came during a two-day campaign swing, ticking off a long list of boxes, both geographically and with key constituencies. He unveiled what aides term a vision for health care in North Carolina. He held a rally in Jacksonville, Florida. He courted Hispanics near Miami, black voters in Atlanta, another rally Friday in Newport News, Virginia. He's making the rounds. He has tried to contrast his jam-packed schedule with Biden, who's made just 12 visits outside of Delaware since his August 11th selection of California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate, worrying some Democrats about his lackluster effort to campaign, but he really can't do any better. In fact, here's a capper for you. It turns out that a staffer for Biden has revealed that he's on an anti-dementia medication, but it has the unfortunate side effect of bringing about incontinence, so that the staff has actually had debates about what type of adult diaper Joe Biden ought to be wearing. I think he has a future post his political life making advertisements for Depends. They've debated to make sure the diaper doesn't show through his clothing and doesn't crinkle when he urinates. How bad is that? Meanwhile, Michael Bloomberg, or Little Mike as he's known, sitting next to Michelle Obama, he's actually a little tiny kid compared to Michelle, who's, of course, big enough to have played linebacker for Oregon State when she was known as Michael LeVon Robinson, has been violating election law in Florida by paying off legal fees for felons to enable them to vote. In 2018, a constitutional amendment was approved to allow felons voting rights, but they had to fulfill their sentences, with the exception of those who had been convicted of sexual assault or murder. That required all fines, court fees, and restitutions to be paid for sentences to be considered fulfilled. Bloomberg has spent over $16 million paying them off, but get this. He's only been paying them off for blacks and Latinos because he believes they'll vote Democrat. I have no doubt whatsoever. This is a gross violation of election law and of Florida law, according to Governor DeSantis and Attorney General Moot, both of whom are Republicans. Bloomberg violated Florida election laws. Moot has sent a letter to the FBI and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement asking them to investigate. She also ordered a lead prosecutor to work with law enforcement in any grand jury the government may impanel. I believe Bloomberg has overstepped his bounds and that he may pay for it. Again, I repeat, the call-in number, 703-879-8880, for Giuseppe and me.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We've tried for years and years to use passive resistance
and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There is blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is your host, Jim Fetz, and I'm very pleased to see that Scorpio has already joined us. Please give us your thoughts and take your time about it, my friend.
Oh, Dr. Fetzer, thanks for having me on. Can you hear me okay?
Very clearly.
Okay, good. Well, I thought it was pretty funny how Nancy Pelosi was trying to do this little shuck and jive routine that Groper Joe should not even give Trump the respect of having a debate because he's such a terrible liar. I thought that was pretty sad strategy, you know?
Well, it's pathetic given the Democrats are lying their faces off, but of course she's worried that he's going to commit a major gaffe, which is entirely possible. And, you know, there are lots of things that can happen here. Just as Trump knew from patting Hillary on the back that she was wired but went out to beat her anyway, I think he'll have similar contempt for their best efforts to give Biden a voice, even by telling him what to say. What's pathetic is that the American people should regard him as a viable candidate when he's made it so obvious again and again and again that he's utterly incompetent. And we even have confirmation from a former staffer that they've got him in adult diapers because his anti dementia medication brings about incontinence. I mean, think about it, Scorpio. How much worse could it get?
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. But I thought it was pretty funny when Trump offered to take a drug test and said that Joe Biden should as well before the debate, implying that, you know, he was on all kinds of medications to keep him, cogent and rational.
Well, you know, some of these Democrats are addicted to this adrenochrome, and that appears to me to include Nancy Pelosi, certainly Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, and a host of others. Very, very bad. This, of course, is blood that's been had massively infused with adrenaline by instilling fear principally into little children before they kill them in ritual sacrifices. I hate to say these things, but believe me, there's so much evidence documenting it. If anyone wants to learn more about this, where Barack Obama appears to have been also involved in these child pedophilia operations, go to Jim the Conspiracy Guy and watch my show on Pizzagate. Frankly, it's something you all need to understand. And the Democrats appear to be overwhelmingly engulfed in their own, you know, bizarre, sadistic, absolutely repulsive activities. I mean, it is disgusting beyond belief.
Yeah, well, Dr. Fetzer, let me ask you, where do you think they're going to try to go with this whole, cheating thing with the mail-in voting and, other methods? It seems like the mainstream media is really trying to sort of, drop breadcrumbs to us to kind of follow this trail that the election is going to be disputed no matter who wins.
Well, I think this is why it's so terribly important that Trump have had the opportunity to appoint another justice to the court. Because if you had that 4-4 split, it could create great chaos. The Democrats think they can manipulate it to their advantage. But as you have heard, there are several lines of analysis that suggest it's not going to play out the way they would like. By one scenario, for example, it was supposed to be uncertain even over the date of the inauguration that was going to lead to Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, being installed as a president. But her term will have expired before the inauguration. So that won't work. And if you have a vote by the House of Representatives, it's not on the basis of the total number of Democrats and Republicans, but one vote per state. And it just so happens that the Republicans control 26 votes by that standard. The Democrats only 23, a plus one coming from Michigan when Justin Amash sided with the Democrats to overcome their 7-7 split. So it's pretty damn interesting that even the worst case scenario isn't going to work out to their advantage.
Interesting. And are you taking these poll numbers that they're throwing out, like Wisconsin, Groper Joe, supposed to be 10 points ahead or something like that, and Michigan too? Are you just taking these as to be completely phony polling numbers like they did in 2016?
Oh, yeah. 2016 was so revealing, Scorpio. I mean, we even had pollsters. We had intercepted communications where they were explaining their technique, how they were over-polling Democrats, over-polling women, over-polling self-described progressives and liberals. I mean, it was grotesque. They were manufacturing, photoshopping images. You'd have Hillary in St. Petersburg with a crowd of 300 while Trump was in Boca Raton with a crowd of 30,000, and they'd Photoshop. When Trump came to Kenosha, there was a line of citizens 5 miles long turning out to greet him. When Biden came, there was one woman, a school teacher, out to be his cheering squad. I mean, it's that bad. And you have all of these left-leaning websites like Common Dreams and in others, reader-supported news and so forth, pleading for money. Well, they wouldn't be pleading for money if the Democrats were doing well, if there were any enthusiasm for Joe Biden or any expectation that he'd be successful in this campaign. So, you know, they're in terrible shape. The teleprompter, by the way, just failed Biden. You know, I noticed this, I think it was last night, he said he joined the Senate 180 years ago. I mean, he said it. And it wasn't a joke. I mean, his incompetence is overwhelming. Scorpio, why hang on there, where I think Paul is also here on the line. Paul, join us.
Well, in a follow-up to the brief exchange Giuseppe and I had at the end of your last show, I would like everybody to know that I came out of the womb with a high school diploma, because when I was inside, I wasn't just gestating, I was studying. That's just for Giuseppe and myself. They also had to run me out of the hospital. I got accused of sexual harassment, too. I was hitting on some of the nurses. So let's just say I've always been a little bit advanced in the way that I look at things. And as you know, we only have just a little bit of time to the big event of the season. No, I'm not talking about the debate. The undefeated Kansas City Chiefs travel to the undefeated Baltimore Ravens tonight. And I think it's going to be a huge deal, except for the fact that there's not going to be any fans in the stands.
Paul, you know these games are rigged. I mean, I wish
it weren't
the case. But the NHL, and it appears maybe even the NBA. And, you know, these players are antagonizing the public by getting involved and taking political stances. When you go to an NBA game and it says right on the court, Black Lives Matter, or you have players with the name of alleged victims who may, in fact, have actually been criminals themselves. I mean, it's just disgusting. I think they're going to take a massive hit. Their viewership is already dropping precipitously. And because they get their big salaries by virtue of the networks being able to offer these huge contracts, when they lose their viewership, they're not going to be offered those big contracts. Therefore, their big salaries are going to be in jeopardy, and they'll have done it to themselves. We want politics separate from sports. I mean, the reason most of us enjoy sports is because it's apolitical. It has nothing to do with politics, and they've queered the whole deal. I mean, it's just ridiculous what they have done.
Yeah.
And it's kind of creepy, too, how the seeing these empty stadiums, it's creepy. It's like this post-apocalyptic, you know, vision. And then some of these basketball games, they've been putting these electronic, you know, people, faces, you know, on these screens instead of people. It's like the message is, we don't need you.
I saw that, Scorpio. How embarrassing is that? Paul, I gather you're trying to get a word back in edgewise?
Well, sure. No, I had a little bit of follow-up, but that's fine. You know, the back and forth is okay. I just was kind of ready to jump in on the point that was just raised by Scorpio, because I was shocked, and I've not checked it out, but I went over the other night to socialize with a friend of mine. You know, he just happens to be black, and that's a story in and of itself, some of the discussions we've had about some of these issues. But he was telling me that these are real people that pay to have their TV image there. So they're like, they're spectators, right? But it's just basically a screen, like a big screen TV, where they put the ticket holder's image there on the screen and they're watching. It's just like, I go, you're kidding, right? He goes, no. Those people are like paid spectators, but it's their TV image on the screen there that you're looking at. And that's like, oh my God.
Hey, listen, I want to bring Giuseppe in. He's been so kind here as to, you know, produce the show today. I want him to have the opportunity to share his thoughts as well. Giuseppe, please do join the conversation.
Well, I think the funniest thing I've seen over the whole pro sports lunacy is a couple days ago, there was a meme going around that LeBron James and Antonio Davis, the two stars on the Los Angeles Lakers, had put on a lace doily with a black cloak underneath to honor Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it was so believable. It was a spoof, but that's how insane it is. Most people believed it.
Wow.
Right.
And the other thing with the NFL is I think they were really smart after week one of paying homage to Black Lives Matter. They completely got rid of it because their viewer base wants nothing of it. And so you're not seeing any of that anymore, which is really wise.
Yes.
Well, there's nothing like seeing a multimillionaire, you know, player of color preaching to us about systemic racism. I mean,
Have any of us been able to even define systemic racism that's supposed to be institutionalized, all pervasive? I don't see it. How can we have elected a black president twice and there be systemic racism? How can you have all these black political leaders? Look at the mayors of many of these cities. Look at Chicago, for example, if there's systemic racism. How can we have so many blacks on the police forces if there's systemic racism? In fact, it's bizarre that they're making this charge, but you can see it's part and parcel of the effort to exacerbate racial relations, which was illustrated by toppling the statues, trying to revive the Civil War. It hasn't worked then. It's not going to work now. But I'll tell you, these people are running really close, I think, in some cases, to having themselves taken out. If you get rid of the police, you're going to be reduced to vigilante justice, save with the exception of the sheriffs, who have a constitutional responsibility, and across the country appear to be very fine law enforcement officers. But if we really were to get rid of law enforcement, it would be vigilante justice. And as I don't tire of pointing out, we have 130 million armed Americans who aren't voting for Joe Biden.
The only systemic racism I see in this country is how the globalist parasites treat the American goyim like cattle. That's the only systemic racism I see.
Yeah.
Well, the chant we're always hearing is that we want racial justice, which I don't think can be defined. And the only way it could be so-called accomplished is to give the government more power to control the way people behave and interact with one another.
Well, suppose you talk about racial justice as meaning no race is disproportionately punished for crimes, but only for the crimes it commits. Well, it turns out disproportionately crimes in the United States are committed by blacks. They commit the overwhelming majority of crimes in virtually every single category. The one which is an exception has to do with crimes involving alcohol, where Native Americans prevail because they have a genetic intolerance to alcohol, and therefore, you know, you get this stereotype of the drunken Indian, but it's because they have that predisposition. They can't handle it. But the reason you have many more blacks incarcerated is because blacks are committing many more crimes than any other racial group. So it's all stupid from the beginning. And the idea of defunding the police is about as completely stupid as anyone could possibly have. They did in Harlem. They were interviewing residents of Harlem about the idea of defunding the police because de Blasio was moving 600 cops off of the street, plainclothes cops that were involved in preventing crimes from taking place. And all the residents were saying they didn't think that was a good idea. And one of them candidly said, get rid of the police. He said that would be suicide. Because it is the lowest, you know, level of society that is most in need of the protection. It's just as in the rioting and looting. They're destroying so many small businesses by minorities that have been taken out. There's no sense of social justice here. This is to create upheaval and havoc and uncertainty to promote the Democrat agenda. It's disgusting beyond words. Paul.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to jump in there with Giuseppe. He didn't really steal because he didn't say exactly what I was going to say. But there is, racism, institutional and systemic racism. And we all know which direction it's pointed at. It's overarching. You cannot deny it. And here's more proof of
you're, ever you're talking needed. About racism favoring one ethnic group over others.
Well, disfavoring us, white people. It's the white Europeans, okay, that are the brunt of the racial agenda. There's zero doubt about that. I think we all know it. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read just a little bit from this article. Apparently, now this is news to me, but here it is now in its nearly 139-year history, the LA Times has a non-white owner, okay? Some dude named Chun Ting Cheng Cheng Chong, whatever.
Yeah, you know, Chinese, of course.
Yeah, doctors. they're all doctors. I'm sure he was a straight A student. Well, listen what he says. Here's, and you can read his Twitter. His Twitter is a disgusting virtue signal, one after the other, featuring photos of black nurses and Hispanic nurses. He's pimping the COVID vaccine. It's just nauseating. But check out this quote, right? As the LA Times first non-white owner in nearly 139 years, my wife, Michelle, and I are determined to increase diversity within the organization, he writes. Only a diverse newsroom can accurately tell the city's stories. Well, of course, you know, a person isn't just a good journalist, but you got to put a little color to them, and they're even better. Now, check out the next quote. You'll love it. Ready? This is a quote from this guy, Dr. Shun Ting Chang Chang Chang, whatever his name is. As a billionaire of color, I will prove that I am not white adjacent by using my ownership of the LA Times to run even more stories, blah, 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 blah.
But look, race does not ipso facto determine competence. You could have a racially diverse staff of incompetence, and that doesn't. So there's nothing about that that's going to ensure they're going to get better coverage of the news. It would actually be for disaster as a news source. Jim, of course, I know that, Paul. I'm simply spelling it out.
Okay. I know, but you don't need to spell that out. We're all in the same company here, and you knew I didn't read the story for that reason. It's just, I don't know, just because I live in California, I have been revolted by the Asian invasion. There's no other way to put it. It's just unbelievable. It's like a tide that started in the late 80s, and it just has not stopped. And
Paul, let me ask you. We've all talked about Montezuma's revenge, you know, as Hispanics have taken over California virtually from Juarez and all the way up, you know, to San Francisco. How do the Chinese and the Latinos get along?
I couldn't put a finger to it because it's nothing that I would know anything about, seeing as I'm neither Chinese nor Latino. I had very few Asian clients in my career. I had now and then. I had almost zero Hispanic clients. So it's nothing I could speak to. But I will tell you this, okay, is that obviously, the Asians are, quote, the more desirable minority in terms of their rates of criminality and their academic achievement and so on and so forth. But the biggest problem that I have is not so much with their personalities or lack thereof, which is an issue because they're just not the same. But it's the numbers. The numbers that will just not stop if we don't stop it, because to them, all right, we are the land of opportunity. That's why they're getting out of China and other places over there and coming here. That's why the Vietnamese immigration has not stopped. I mean, once we took in a certain amount and placed them in certain cities, San Jose being one, Long Beach another, in Galveston, Texas, well, then you get the chain migration that just continues. You can walk around here and still hear the Vietnamese being spoken, and the Vietnam War was, 50 years ago.
Bear in mind, we've discussed this before, but Chinese and Asians generally have a higher IQ, greater self-discipline, and are more successful at intellectual, academic, and other activities. Whereas, you know, the Latinos, that's not true of. I'm sure they're, if you had to lay out, I'm just making an estimate, if the average IQ of blacks is around 80 and of whites is around 90, I suppose Latinos probably come in around 90, though there are exceptions, of course, all over the place. I mean, we're talking about a distribution, you know, a bell-shaped curve around the IQ. So you got some who are much better and higher and more successful than others. But I would suspect the average might fall along that line.
So, you know, anyway, here's the reason what strikes me about the article and the reason I read from it is here is this guy. He's only here because it's predominantly white country and he's taken advantage of predominantly white technology. You can say what you will about Asians' academic achievement, right? But they do not have, and they've demonstrated in history, they don't have the kind of inventive genius that white people have, okay? They have not invented most of the technology. That's why they have to copy it from us. And it's well known that they violate our intellectual property laws, as opposed to mostly the Japanese respect them. But what I wanted to mention is, here's this guy, and he gets a form. He makes it big here in America, okay, and he runs some health organizations. It wasn't just from being an MD. Apparently he was a businessman. Okay, good for him. And what does he do right off the bat? Throws white people under the bus, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, he had to say this or do this. He could have just kept his mouth shut and run his business. But no, he's got to make a statement. And like I said, you read his Twitter feed, and it's nothing but pandering and virtue signaling to non-whites. So in my opinion, like, we're going to get turned on by everybody. I think we all saw it earlier in the year. There was that Asian woman who got some sort of post to the New York Times, and she got caught on that one, I think it was like a Facebook post where she was talking about white people and how much she hated them. I forget her name. And there was a big scandal because she didn't even really get fired. And a white person that said the same thing would for sure have been fired. So we don't really have any friends, in my opinion, unless they come forward and expressly, you know, say so. So anyway, just my thoughts, my rambling. Irritated the hell out of reading this article. So.
And Giuseppe, your thoughts.
Dr. Fetzer, have a drink of water.
I just swallowed wrong. Go ahead.
What blows my mind, gentlemen, is how, the U.S., with the official statistics of 2010, 64% of the country was white, 16% Hispanic, 12% black. So, Scorpio, you were right on Saturday. I was wrong. I said 19. It's 12. And all Asian 5%. So, you know, that shifted a little bit. Let's just say for 2020, whites are maybe 60%, Hispanics 19%, blacks aren't changing that much. So that'll be 12. Asians are probably higher, about 8%, and everything else makes up very little. So why is it like you can see on any television station or in the mass media? Oh, the Hispanic culture, which isn't really a word. The Mexican culture is so great. We're proud of our culture. And African Americans, oh, we're so proud of our African heritage. And you go along, oh, Native Americans, they're proud, you know, on the reservations. But you get to the white, you're a racist if you care at all about your culture. And I'm just so incensed that subhuman satanic pieces of shit like George Soros, Yorgi Schwartz, the Hungarian Jew who as a teen during World War II sold out his fellow Jews to the Nazis for shekels. And if you know anything about how tight-knit the Jewish tribe is, that just shows how despicable that clown is. But it's not just him. It's all the globalist parasites, the internationalist Jews, who are trying to destroy this country. And here we are at the break, so be proud to be white.
Yeah, well said.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
She
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, it's Jim Fetzer with Giuseppe Scorpio and Paul. Scorpio, why don't you pick up the cudgels here? I know you have more thoughts you want to advance.
Well, I always find it funny when they drag out this term Hispanic or Latino. And I can just tell you from personal experience, in Central and South America, there's no such thing as a Latino or a Hispanic. All these different countries are fairly nationalistic, and a lot of the countries don't like each other. So each person would say, oh, I'm a Mexican, or I'm a Honduran, or whatever. There's no great racial group called Latino. That only exists in American nomenclature.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Giuseppe.
Well, you ought to... go ahead.
Paul, go ahead. Here?
Okay, go ahead. Well, I'll respond to that. You ought to send a little note to that effect to Dr. Pat Soon-Shiong, because here's part of his letter that he wrote. This is the kind of thing I was just talking about, right? So he wrote this 2.5-page letter, and here's how it starts out. Dear Latino Caucus and LA Times staff, the LA Times has faced unprecedented demands this summer to raise our standards of racial diversity. Really? Okay, well, take your word for it. And to adequately represent the communities we serve, our staff makeup and coverage should better reflect the fact that 1 in 2 people in LA County is Latino. This should go without saying. After thought and constructive sessions between staff and management, I can now share with excitement my commitments in support of the LA Times Guild Latino Caucus and in solidarity with the Black Caucus. Oh, well, where are the white people? Where are the Asians? They're not mentioned. So we'll go on. I'll just briefly go a couple of little sentences on this one paragraph or two. We are creating a database to help us diversify our recruitment prospects, adding names of talented journalists recommended by the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Well, isn't that nice? We will endeavor to increase representation of Latino and other BIPOC journalists. I don't know, BIPOC, people of color. I don't know what by people of color journalists in various departments, including courts, police and crime, investigations, Latin America, national, Washington, D.C., and on and on. Also, later on in his Twitter feed, he shows a picture of he appointed the Washington bureau chief. And of course, she's a woman of color. So,
Paul, I'd like to respond to that because this is the Los Angeles Times newspaper, correct?
Yeah, this is the guy. This is the new owner, Dr.
Park right.
Chung. This is his letter that he wrote to the staff.
Right, right. And you know, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but I'd be willing to bet that, you know, the ownership of a paper like that is not just a matter of saying, oh, I'll give you so many millions of dollars. I think those kind of flagship papers, you don't buy that paper unless you agree to participate in a certain agenda. Because, sure. You know, there isn't one newspaper that isn't following the exact same code. There has to be marching orders handed down from a central point, I believe. And the other thing I would add to that is that I just find it very suspicious that they're able to create a monoculture. And as they continue to demand these racial quotas, what it essentially means is that when we no longer have a merit-based system, the government and corporations that are controlled by the government are going to decide who gets a job and who doesn't.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very well put. I couldn't agree more. We all have seen the meme of the Jewish, you know, figure in the cloak behind the curtain, you know, rubbing his little hands together. So that's exactly what we're looking at, in my opinion. There's zero doubt about it. And I've long called, and in a form of contempt, because I do think that in many ways, I've long called most Asians a white man's lapdog. I feel that they're just easily, quickly to become a Jewish lapdog as well. I can't see anybody of any wealth and prestige and power wanting to own a newspaper like this. I mean, in my opinion, there's other businesses that would be more attractive. And in fact, everybody knows that newspapers are falling in circulation and not making money as a rule.
Come on, it's politics. Yeah. It's all politics. Yeah. He wants to influence the political discourse by controlling the news. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious why you'd want to do it. Giuseppe, are you free for a conversation?
Oh, of course. Sorry, I just was muted before.
Yeah, go ahead. Join in.
I think Paul is making an excellent point, as is Scorpio, that it's the prestige, this wealthy Chinese guy, because there's so much of Chinese money pouring into California and Oregon and Washington that's like a jewel in the crown for the Chinese people to own such a prestigious newspaper. And I think that it also gives them access to controlling coverage of China in a positive way. I mean, the you know, some of the stuff that is being done with China, especially recently with the revelations of their participation along with Fauci in releasing the bioweapon SARS-CoV-2 and the whole TikTok thing and the whole, I can't think of that cell phone company that got in trouble for spying. There's a ton of Chinese spying going on right now. So if they can buy a paper and in one of the top media markets of the nation be able to create coverage that's favorable to them, that's a pretty good feather in their cap.
Yeah, very very well put. A nice additional point you made there. And you know, here's the thing: if I was Chinese, I'd be pissed if I was reading this, right? Just like if a white man said all this stuff, I'd be very angry at him. The Chinese don't get any play at all in this letter or his Twitter feed. It's all about Hispanics and people of color, and he's talking about he's going to work with the staff to promote the Spanish language version of the LA Times en Español. Well, let me tell you something. I worked off and on with Hispanics for the better part of 30 years. They don't really care about reading any paper, okay? The average working Hispanic, in my opinion, they're just like everybody else. They want to get paid. They want to have a good time. They want to raise their family. They're not reading the newspaper. It's all just a bunch of Jewish drivel. Ugh.
I can't really dispute that. As Jim said a few moments ago, the newspapers are dying slow, painful death. I mean, it's funny. Where I grew up in Milwaukee, there was an iconic building that housed the two largest papers in the state, the Milwaukee Journal and the Milwaukee Sentinel, that was recently sold. And I remember when I was just getting out of school, even before I got out of journalism school, I used to work at the paper, and it was so wild because they had big windows that you could watch the presses go on. And it was, I'll never forget the thrill of when I knew my first published article, I went down because you could get the paper earlier if you went there about midnight instead of waiting for it to hit the boxes. And And now they sold that building. It's just, wow. Talk about, you know, is there any pulse left for the newspaper industry?
Well, and you know, I'm convinced that newspapers do not make money. They lose money, and they're getting sort of some kind of a secret subsidy to keep them going because they're such valuable propaganda arms. And I think the same is true for a lot of these news organizations, CNN and others. I just don't believe they're actually making money. They're getting some kind of secret funding from the deep state or whatever you want to call it.
I think that's an excellent point, Scorpio. And I think what's going on is you have these giant transnational conglomerates owning them. So they actually can benefit from taking the loss because they still have it as a public megaphone, so to speak.
And just real quickly before we maybe go back to Jim, I wanted to tell my own little personal story in relation to what Giuseppe just said, because we're closer in age. But yeah, Jim and I and Giuseppe can all remember a time when, you know, news organizations and newspapers, you know, there was a little bit of prestige associated with them. And I still remember the thrill I felt. I was 18 and 19 years old, and I was actually, I got a job as a security guard with some company because I answered an ad. And it was most of the time I was working just, you know, normal buildings where you walk around, you do rounds, and you could sit at a desk and read. So, you know, the attraction was that you could, you know, in between, you could study on the job. Well, one of the assignments I got, because I guess my boss thought well of me or something, is he sent me up to San Francisco because they had like a temporary contract to watch the computer room, because this was in computers were just starting to get, you know, come online and get big, right? And I felt really cool about it, you know, just going to work in the San Francisco Chronicle. And, you know, my job was basically just to keep look at some of these gauges, and if there was any issue with any of them, as far as like the temperature and other such things, I was to call. But essentially, I was just hanging out. And I used to put a camera around my neck, and I pretended I was like a photographer. And I, actually, you know, when you're 18 and 19, you kind of do what today they call LARPing, right? Live action role play. And I wanted people to think I was a photographer, you know. So I was really proud every day to walk in to the building. And I wasn't in uniform. It was one of those jobs where you didn't have to wear a guard uniform to go. So I basically, you know, kind of dress up a little bit and hang a camera on my neck. And I just thought, oh, this is so cool, man. I'm going to work in the San Francisco Chronicle, you know, like 18, 19 years old. But, you know, nowadays I wouldn't want to get near that place with a 10-foot pole. Anyway, there you go.
Scorpio.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think, too, that beyond the newspapers and some of these newspaper, you know, news organizations, I think there's other businesses that aren't run for profit but we're supposed to think they are. You know, I think the ownership of the corporations is in far fewer hands than we are told. I think there's a lot of interlocking ownership, secret ownership. I think the number of hands that own these major corporations are so small. That's why they were able to create this monoculture where miraculously every corporation seems to have the exact same ideological stance.
Yep. Yes, indeed.
And just excellent point.
On your comments earlier about, you know, football and the weirdness, you know, what I was going to say earlier on when I commented on it, I tried to take in and just tried to enjoy, I don't know, for old time's sake, I guess, a little college football this weekend because the schedule's starting to flesh out now, more of the bigger team. The SEC just started playing. And I was so dismayed to see the cheerleaders on the sidelines all in masks, jumping around, doing their cheers in masks. Yeah, and a lot of them were black masks, too. So can you imagine, you know, you want to see a good-looking cheerleader, right? The classic, you know, Southern Belle. And a lot of these schools, you know, they have good-looking cheerleaders. Probably not as in the old days as good as USC. USC had the most of, I mean, most of the USC cheerleaders could probably just go right from their cheerleading assignment into the pages of Playboy. But, yeah, it was just despicable to see these white Southern girls with, like, blonde hair or brown hair, whatever, jumping up and down with mask and, in often cases, black mask on the sidelines. It was disgusting. And it's the cuck ritual being put through by we all know who.
Yeah, and it really, you know, it's pretty clear that the idea of masking really is there to break down the psychological will of the people that are forced to wear masks. It's been known for a long time. And, you know, the Muslims have used it for, you know, the Sharia law and the making women wear a bedsheet over their face. It dehumanizes people and it breaks their will, and they damn well know it.
Yes, indeed.
Well, what do you guys expect to happen tomorrow night? I think it's going to be a disaster for Biden, assuming he shows up. I think he will show up, that they've got this device, but Trump will be aware of what's going on. I can't see any way Biden comes out of this intact.
I think Biden's going to need a lot more than a secret implanted earpiece. They're going to need to make a whole new clone of him and pump him up with some Dr. Feelgood juice. The guy's in big trouble. Trump's going to destroy him.
Yeah, no, probably Trump will destroy him anyway, and I can't really watch it. It's like one of those things where I look at the two masks and the plastic bag in my car, and sometimes I think about, well, just be easier. I won't get hassled. Nobody will say anything to me if I just put it on, and I just look down, and I go, I can't do it. I just can't. And I feel the same way about the debate. I just can't watch it. You know, it's just going to be nauseating, and I may sneak a peek, but you can be sure they're going to have Biden on stimulants. I mean, don't you think, Jim, they're going to have him on something?
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, you got to watch it. It's going to be very damn interesting. I have no doubt.
It's an embarrassment to America. I'm sorry.
That's There's no doubt about that.
Well, thank you for agreeing with that much.
Well, Jim, I wanted to ask you, have you seen the photographs of the two different Bidens? One Biden with the ear connected to the side of the face and the other Biden with, separate earlobes. Have you seen those pictures?
No. Tell us about them.
I haven't seen those either.
Yeah, I just saw some pictures of supposedly there's two different Bidens, one with, they're very different sets of ears. Which is, a pretty unique thing, especially when the earlobes are connected in one person and they're not in the other. So there might be a clone that shows up, who knows, or a double, let's say.
Well, nothing would shock us, right? I mean, we all believe Jim's work was pretty solid on the Hillary Clinton double. And, man, my God, what do we come to in this country? Yikes.
I think that Biden's going to start out all jacked up, probably put in a good initial 30 minutes, and then I think we're going to start to see the mental, literal brain damage start to kick in with he won't be able to make long, coherent statements. And I think 2 hours is a marathon, not a sprint. I think he's going to come out. But it's going to tell. You can't hide that. There's just so, video upon video of him having these moments. So I think we're going to see something.
Hey,
Look, here's the deal.
In between breaks, they're going to run out some 13-year-old girls to get them all pumped up again.
Well, the sniffing the hair will definitely jack him up for a while, no doubt.
Yes.
I can
It's clear that Biden is such an unqualified candidate that they can only have run him to be a placeholder so that he wouldn't disrupt their agenda, which is just to utilize him, to promote Kamala, I guess, initially. But I think Hillary really has her stake in the game. They want to figure out a way to get Hillary into office covertly. I'm still very convinced. Your thoughts?
Well, one thing about President Kamala Harris, which I think that's the real objective here, he won't last long after if he is elected. And I think Biden's more of a threat than a lot of people think. Between the media constantly chipping away at Trump, a new book comes out every week trashing him, and now they've got his tax. Oh, he didn't pay enough taxes. He's a bad person. But, if the thing about Kamala Harris, if you don't like Kamala Harris as president, you're a racist and a misogynist. So shut up and don't say anything.
How ridiculous is it?
I can see it now. Kamala Harris gets sworn in after Joe Biden, whatever happens to him, take your pick of the scenario. And she, in a moment of blindness and naivety, she selects Hillary Clinton. And then, lo and behold, something happens to Kamala Harris.
Yeah. So
now we have President Hillary Clinton, and away we go.
She wants it. I tell you, she still wants it. I have no doubt. You can feel it. It's visceral.
Yeah, but how would they get Hillary Clinton in there now? Like, what scenario do you see where by which they could get Hillary in there? You know, both Joe and Kamala Harris die, and then she comes there. Well, how would that happen? Sure.
Well, Joe's going to step aside right off the bat on the grounds of, bad health. I mean, that's obvious. So then you move up Kamala, and you got to have a vice president. And, I mean, it could be Hillary, and then Kamala steps aside, or, you know, they arrange to switch positions. It could be something like that. When it was going to be, it was plausible that Nancy could assume the presidency, it would be on a temporary basis to bring in Hillary as her VP, and then she'd step out. But it's something like that. Something like that.
Or we could just
personally, I think the Clinton era has passed, and I think there's just too much dirt with the Clinton Foundation, the global money laundering, the Clinton body count. There's just too much dirt, and I think the old guard is on its way out, and the new guard is wanting to take over with the radical Marxists,
AOC and all. Yes, I think that's probably correct. Yeah, we've had enough of the Clintons forever. So I'll revise. I think you make a good point.
We can hope that's true. So has anybody besides me kind of had a thought recently about, hey, whatever happened to the old Ghislaine Maxwell situation here? We don't really see or hear much of that anymore. I guess it's just kind of, forgive and forget, huh? Out of sight, out of mind.
Well, Paul, it's strange that her trial isn't until next July, and there hasn't been one photograph of her mugshot posted anywhere on the internet. I find that very strange.
Yeah. How about that, huh? Lots of things have disappeared from coverage. I was making a short list the other day, and I'm sure I could if I were to sit down, because they come at us so quick, so fast and furious with all these different stories and scandals and essentially promoted events. And then a lot of times they just disappear as quickly as they came to the fore. So you kind of wonder, how much of it is real? I personally don't believe that it's real, in my opinion. I think Jeffrey Epstein is somewhere now. And I think Ghislaine Maxwell, if she was in custody, she's not now. And I think by the time next year rolls around, we're all going to forget about a trial. Huh? What trial? What? Who? I think that's the way it's
going. Well, yeah. And it's why would she even be in the United States? She had a French passport. And the French would not have extradited for the crimes that she was charged with, and she has an Israeli passport. So why would she be in the United States to begin with?
Yeah, good point.
Well, the whole thing has been an Israeli op, as far as the sex trafficking with these girls, getting prominent politicians down to Orgy Island and then filming them, getting them on the Lolita Express and all that. All really to blackmail them, to control them for the benefit of the Israeli government.
And I highly recommend, because I just re-listened to it. I heard it before, but an interview with Nick Bryant on Guns and Butter. I'm sure he's done other interviews, but Bonnie Faulkner from Guns and Butter did an episode with Nick Bryant called From Franklin to Epstein, The Cover-Up Continues. And one of the things that he mentioned was that Barr was Attorney General under Bush Sr., and that Barr essentially killed or didn't follow up with the whole Franklin scandal. There was no major indictments and no prosecutions. And fast forward to today, Barr is now Attorney General under Trump. And this guy, Nick Bryant, with all the stuff, and again, it's an hour-long interview, full of detail. And he brought up the fact that, Barr has basically gone nowhere and done nothing with the Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell situation. So that among his many functions, it might be just as a bagman for the establishment, because that's 4 decades in government posts, similar to Fauci. And you don't stay in 4 decades in government or related to it without being, corrupt to the core. So for whatever that's worth.
Well, we have much to look forward to tomorrow night. I, Paul, really would encourage you to watch because something is going to happen there that's very significant. I just haven't any doubt about it. And it's not going to be favorable to Joe Biden. I mean, I feel this very strongly, and you'd hate to miss. Of course, it's going to get massive publicity subsequent to the event. So on the other hand, you can just wait for the instant replays on television.
Well, too bad you don't have a Wednesday show. We could all call in and comment on it.
Yes, yes. Well,
I think Paul will break down and watch part of the debate. That's my prediction.
I might. But I'll feel embarrassed doing it. It's kind of like, you know, the fourth time that I watch Cuties, you know? I was a little embarrassed. I'd already watched it.
Watch Cuties. Oh, my God. That's all so awful. It's all just so awful. Cuties.
Hey, you got to see it. It's content rich, Jim. It's content rich.
Content rich. That's what they're telling us, huh? The Michelle Obamas and the other perverts out there.
Paul, have you looked into who's behind that show? Like, I know it's on Netflix, but like, who directed it and wrote it and produced it? Do you have any idea?
No, I do. I remember I read a couple of reviews, and of course, the reviews were scathing on it. And I mean, I would imagine if it's accurate how it's been described, I can't imagine even normal people would think it would be. Excuse me, that even the not normal, but even the left leaning or, you know, the liberal crowd would think it would be okay, because the descriptions and depictions that are, used in the reviews, it's like, oh my God, how could they even do it? How could they get away with it? I mean, zooming in for crotch shots on young children. I mean, that's in there. That's in the movie. Apparently, I've not seen it.
Well, yeah, it zooms up on that part of their costumes. I mean, it's not naked. I mean, it's not porn per se, but it's soft porn.
Well, I think they just dropped that, see how the public would react, because, you know, they're trying to work towards open pedophilia.
Yes.
Justice Ginsburg was all for it, so.
And this is like the move in California to legalize sexual relations between adults and children between 14 and 17 to minimize the penalties. They're doing it incrementally. So before one day in sex with children is legal.
And it's worth pointing out, I think, that the reason they're doing this, the Jews are promoting this, is because it's all about love. They love us. Don't they, Scorpio and Giuseppe? You could just feel the love from the Jews. It's palpable.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be a kosher production somewhere. That's why I was asking you about it. Yeah. They just love children. And if you can't handle it, man, you're just uptight and a square.
Exactly.
Giuseppe, I'd like you to have the chance for a final word here before we conclude our conversation today.
The true danger of Cuties is, if you remember back in the early 70s, Marlon Brando made a porno and it was art, and all of a sudden everything's the floodgates are open, and that's what they're going to try to do with child pornography now, and it's just satanically evil.
Nice. Thank you. Alright,
see you guys on tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.